This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. There is a growing acknowledgement in the wake of the extreme right's summer of hate in Charlottesville, Virginia, that the left needs to get better organized and fast. Although there are many groups active at various levels fighting for progressive policies, they are not all coordinated, and with a furious assault on constitutional rights, many have been pushed into reacting defensively. Additionally, there is much debate over the tactics of the so-called Antifa movement that is rooted in physically fighting back against white supremacists at the street level. Some progressives feel that such tactics only feed the narrative that the left is just as violent as the right, while others are grateful for the countering of Nazi aggression. Many are pouring their energies into Trump's impeachment, while others worry that we'll just get President Pence, who would be much worse. At the government level, white supremacist White House advisor Steve Bannon is out of a job, and Trump appears increasingly isolated. Meanwhile, progressive Senator Elizabeth Warren, publicly pushing her party to the left, has excoriated Democrats for taking a centrist position in the face of Trump. Joining me to have a discussion about where the left can and should go from here is Arun Gupta. He is an investigative journalist who has written for dozens of publications, including The Washington Post, The Guardian, The Nation, Salon, and Raw Story. He's also a contributor to The Intercept now, and is author of the forthcoming book, Bacon as a Weapon of Mass Destruction. He's also a regular news correspondent for this program. Welcome back to the show, Arun.
Thanks for having me on today, Sonali.
So is Charlottesville a game changer for this country as a whole in terms of how we should view the issue of racism today? Is it also a signal that the left needs to do much more? Or is this just kind of par for the course for American history?
Well, it may be all of the above. So the thing is, for one, it is par for the course for American history. We saw all sorts of elites, politicians, pundits like Paul Krugman, you know, many in the media, CEOs calling Charlottesville and un-American, those and others were implying or even saying that Donald Trump was being un-American, when in fact, there's nothing more American than an enraged mob of white men pummeling a black body, attacking people, and even killing people. Since February of this year, there have been at least six murders committed by white supremacists that have been linked to Donald Trump. There are three other murders that have the appearance of racist hate crimes. There's all sorts of other attacks. There have been a couple of mass casualty plots that have been foiled. So we're living in a very dangerous time, no doubt. And I think the vast majority of elites just suddenly woke up to this threat because of what happened in Charlottesville and then Donald Trump's reaction to it. The irony of this is, I started saying, is that Donald Trump is clearly, the guy is a white nationalist, but he's not a very effective white nationalist. He's in many ways sabotaging his own agenda, with or without Bannon. It's clear it's a project of white nationalism, of ethnic cleansing, you know, reducing legal immigration by half, Muslim ban, you know, we could go on, encouraging police brutality. As dangerous as this moment is, I think there's also reason to be cautious, very cautious. People, and I see this regularly, are using rhetoric like this is war in terms of the fight against the white supremacists and neo-Nazis. I think that's really overblown and dangerous rhetoric. And you know, let's be honest, it's also disrespectful to people who have lived through actual war, particularly those who've lived under falling U.S. bombs. We're not talking about hundreds of thousands of people being killed, as in Iraq or Afghanistan, or, you know, the U.S. responsibility in Syria or Central America, the millions killed Vietnam and Korea. We can go on and on and on. So it's important not to use this overheated rhetoric, because if you think this is war, you may help to make fulfill this to make it a self-fulfilling prophecy.
So, what do you make of this conversation around Antifa, these street-level activists? That many of them are likely people who once went by the name Black Bloc, who also engendered a lot of discussion and debate about tactics. And maybe this discussion and debate itself is distracting or a waste of time, but some say the Antifa literally saved their lives in Charlottesville, and others say that nonviolence should be the only response to violence, even if it means getting your head bashed in.
Well, that's the categorical nonviolence position. I actually cut my teeth in Baltimore getting arrested with the Jonah House folks, and that includes the Berrigan brothers and Elizabeth McAllister, these storied Catholic pacifists, and they're just amazing, wonderful people. But I am not a religious or moral pacifist. That said, I promote, or I advocate for what I call strategic pacifism, that you have to push nonviolence as far as possible, but you also always have to be calibrating it according to the changing conditions. And I think what you just said about Black Bloc versus Antifa is a really good way to think about this, that what we saw, especially last fall, Black Bloc is often called a tactic. I disagree with that. There's a clearly a whole ideology that goes around Black Bloc activism, and this is literally when people wear all black, completely mask up, and then they'll kind of go on this property destruction rampage. I witnessed this happen in Portland 2 nights after the election. I witnessed this in DC on Inauguration Day. This type of, we need to put it in context. This is not some sort of like great threat to life and limb that the right, that the media, that the Trump administration makes it out to be. It's basically feel good vandalism, but it alienates people. And again, I saw this in Portland at night when this was happening. I saw all these pissed off security guards, folks of color, brown and black, who are getting paid $10 an hour to protect Nike store windows from these kids on the rampage. In DC, I saw all these folks of color, people of color working in restaurants and cafes, many of whom were scared by what was going on. It really alienates folks, and there is no strategic end. And this was very predictable. What we've now seen in DC, over 200 people are facing felony charges that could put them away for over 70 years as a
Wow.
result of the property. Yeah. So it's really counterproductive. Now, on the other hand, Antifa, which will often use the Black Bloc style tactics of masking up to protect themselves from both the police and the far right. I think there is a role for that as long as it is defensive resistance. I think it's really dangerous to think that the left is going to go toe to toe with the alt-right, because what we've been seeing in various cities, and we've seen this in Berkeley, in Portland, and in Charlottesville, the police have been disappearing from the streets. Now, I think there are various reasons for this. Part of it is because of open carry. But in Portland, I interviewed the police spokesperson for the Portland Police Bureau, who told me directly they don't really view the alt-right as a threat. And this is after Jeremy Christian came to an alt-right rally, and then in April, and then a month later, he stabs two people to death on the train in Portland. And yet the Portland police is more concerned about some window breakers than people murdering people. So, and then I also did a report for The Intercept, showing how alt-right militiamen were actually working directly with Department of Homeland Security police. By all evidence, it appears informal rather than formal policy, but the informal nature is very telling because it shows there's a lot of sympathy between the police and these white supremacists.
Right,
and
so the left cannot rely on police keeping them alive during these gatherings of white supremacists.
Exactly. They can't rely on police. We know that Jeff Sessions' Justice Department and the FBI is going to go after Antifa and the left, because we saw Barack Obama's Justice Department ginning up fake plots during Occupy Wall Street, these terrorist entrapment plots. So the left cannot fight all these various forces as once. That said, as we saw in Charlotte, I think there is a role for defensive resistance. It has to be organized. It has to be strategic, disciplined. It has to have good leadership. But people, it looks like, do need to physically resist. And we should not be criticizing those who are putting their lives on the line and are physically resisting. But we can be critical, I think, of this type of adventurism this senseless property destruction.
What about the impeachment movement after Charlottesville and the comments by Trump? He's lost even more support. He's become more isolated. It's gotten those people who've been signing petitions about impeachment really excited. And suddenly you see more media coverage about impeachment gaining steam. Is that just a pipe dream? Is that something actually worth putting energy into?
Well, I would say, look at what the Republicans in Congress are doing. They are dead set against impeachment, which means that they think that impeachment would actually hurt them.
Right. This is the party, not just Trump, right?
Right, that this would be really damaging to them. So this is the case of Mubarak and the generals in Egypt. Trump would have to become such a liability that they are willing to agree that it is better to ditch him overboard than the consequences. And right now, they fear the consequences far more than ditching Donald Trump. So I think people should be raising the noise on impeachment to make this a crisis for Republicans. But the other thing is I've been asking folks, it's just like, why is no one calling for an American fall? In other words, to have mass protests to oust this dictatorial regime. It would take a lot of organizing to do it, but that's what we need. We have to realize we're in a moment where Trump has basically blown a gaping hole into the side of U.S. history. And coming through it are these goose-stepping MAGA hat-wearing neo-Nazis that he is whipping into a fervor. The American political system is fundamentally broken. Anyone who has faith that it's going to reassert itself just through regular electoral or judicial norms is deluding themselves. Go ahead.
We saw the post-election marches. We saw the post-inauguration marches, the Women's March, the March for Science, huge marches around, tax issues, even an impeachment march. And now it seems as though the marches have kind of disappeared into thin air. Is that what you're referring to, that you're wondering where the sort of next big mobilization is?
Well, that is part of it. And Sonali, we've both been watching this now for a couple of decades. Massive movements on the left just constantly coming into being and disappearing. The anti-globalization movement, the anti-Iraq war movement, the Day Without an Immigrants march in 2006, Occupy Wall Street, on and on and on. It's the movements that are actually upping the resistance. So with Black Lives Matter, where they're shutting down roads, shutting down highways, that is what is creating a crisis. It was the Dreamers that were creating a crisis, the climate justice movement shutting down rails and trying to stop ships and Standing Rock. And so the cost has to be raised to the elites, to the powers that be in Washington. They have to be forced to come to the conclusion Constitution, that impeachment is the path, the easiest path. And so in that way, there has to be a huge amount of disciplined, nonviolent resistance. You know, there also has to be, I think, a focus on figuring out how to protect people from the alt-right. And that's where Antifa can play a very positive role. But the center of this fight is going to be waged through nonviolent political struggle in the streets and direct action.
Do you credit any part of the left for Steve Bannon's departure from the White House, or even, for example, the disbanding of the business advisory councils? I mean, is what's happening in the White House with Trump, the crumbling infrastructure around Trump, something that Trump himself has brought on or the left has pushed?
Well, I mean, I it's hard to see how the left has played a big role in terms of that a national level. I think at times, you know, we have to look at each incident when it occurred. So I think some of the stuff in terms of Berkeley, like shutting down Milo Yiannopoulos, this is just my perspective. I think that was ill-advised. That was exactly what he wanted. It was giving him a larger platform. And when he was shut down, it was by the right wing. It wasn't by the left. Trump is his own worst enemy. I think the idea that, you know, some people, this is all part of some big plot, or that he's just manipulating anything is just, it doesn't fit with what's going on. Historical contingencies matter a lot. And you have someone in the White House who is his own worst enemy. If he had just come out with a strong statement after Charlottesville, he could have avoided all of this. I think part of it is that he does really see this kind of white supremacist right as his base. He's trying to bring it into being through sheer will to power, and that is what is so dangerous. But if he was smarter, he would have just pivoted more towards the Republican Party rather than being so obstinate on wanting to create this type of proto-fascistic movement, and would be a much more effective white nationalist than he is now.
Hmm. What about how the Democratic Party is responding? We haven't seen or heard that much from them lately, but Elizabeth Warren, speaking at the Netroots Nation conference recently, made a pretty strong statement, you know, basically said the Democratic Party should no longer be the party of welfare reform, and, you know, she said the path forward is to go, she's basically said the Democratic Party shouldn't be the party that is interested in locking up nonviolent drug offenders and ripping more holes in our economic safety net, and is trying to pull her party to the left. Do you see this as a good positive sign, you know, whether or not the establishment will go along?
I think it is a positive sign, but there definitely credit goes to the grassroots, to things like Occupy Wall Street and Black Lives Matter, to very much to the Bernie Sanders campaign and all the young people who poured energy into it. Warren and a wing of the Democratic Party, they're just reading the handwriting on the wall. You know, let's remember that Hillary Clinton bit by bit basically repudiated every major policy from the Clinton era when her husband was in office and was oh so popular among Democrats. Bill Clinton left with, I think, approval ratings above 60% in 2000. So the base has definitely repudiated NAFTA, mass incarceration, welfare reform, the immigration reform. That is the basis for all the deportations today. That's thanks to Bill Clinton, you know, the deregulation of Wall Street. So that's a positive sign. But at the same time, I'm going to say what I've been saying for well over a decade now that the Democratic Party is a graveyard of social movements, and people should be building independent movements that seek to shift the whole political spectrum to the left. Because if we look at the trajectory of U.S. history over the last 50 years, we go from Johnson to Nixon, Carter to Reagan, Clinton to Bush, Obama to Trump. With each iteration, it keeps shifting to the right. The Democrat shifts to the right and the Republican shifts to the right. So just pouring all the hopes in some new Democratic Party standard bearer is not going to fundamentally shift the course of history in the way that it needs to be. Mm-hmm. This has to come from the grassroots and mass movements and disruption of the existing power structures.
Finally, Arun, are there any hopeful places on left strategy and organizing that you're seeing as having really made progress? I mean, you've brought up Black Lives Matter quite a bit. There's been much less media coverage of Black Lives Matter since Trump's election. So people might imagine that the organizing has also taken a step back. But of course, that's not true. And any other movements where you see that real progress being made, because we're just in defensive mode, right? Fighting the travel ban is a big victory.
Yeah, and like I said, let's be clear, there is a lot of terrible stuff that the Trump administration is still carrying out. You know, Scott Pruitt at the EPA is quietly destroying the EPA. There was a recent report about how, deportations had dropped under Trump. Well, that's really fails to capture what is going on. It's because there's a lot less people coming over the border, for one, and then two, they don't have the U.S. government doesn't have the mechanism to carry out the huge number of deportation hearings. So they're actually picking up a lot more people who are being held. And I've been tracking, you know, a lot of the immigrant rights resistance, and I think that is a hopeful area. And I think, you know, people need to pour a lot more energy into that, especially who don't come from the immigrant left or the Latino and Mexican community, who are on the front lines of this vicious assault from the Department of Homeland Security, because a lot of people are being picked up and deported. Who were not being deported in terms of their status under the Obama administration. So there is positive resistance, but it is also resistance in the face of these attacks. And this was, you know, we talked about this a lot last fall, and this is why I was like, look, as terrible as Hillary Clinton is, you know, we want to see Black Lives Matter, the climate justice movement, immigrant rights, low-wage workers in the street. If Donald Trump is elected, we're going to see white supremacy premises on the march. It was utterly predictable. And I think a lot of people on the left are just so, had such a knee-jerk hatred of the Democratic Party and Hillary Clinton and the Clintons, they cut their nose off to spite their face and not recognize that Hillary Clinton was the enemy we needed, not Donald Trump.
Well, Arun Gupta, always a pleasure to have you on. Thanks for sharing your insight with us.
Great to be with you today, Sonali.
My guest is Arun Gupta, investigative journalist who's written for dozens of publications, including The Washington Post, The Guardian, The Nation, Salon, and Raw Story. He's also a contributor to The Intercept and author of the forthcoming book, Bacon as a Weapon of Mass Destruction. And he's a regular news correspondent for this show. We've been discussing left strategy in the wake of Charlottesville. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.